All right, good evening, everybody. Happy Hanukkah. Great to see everyone. So tonight's going to be a shorter version than usual because we want to, of course, have enough time to party with food, drink, more drink, and play a game or two. But just continuing with the theme, at least to connect Hanukkah with the next body part. Anybody want to guess what body part we're going to associate with the holiday of Hanukkah?
What's been done so far?
So far, well, I'm not going to say. Let you
nose,
people. We've done nose,
eyes,
face.
I think that's it, right?
No, and teeth. Those are the four we've done so far. Okay.
Tongue.
Which?
Tongue.
Well,
that was part of the teeth.
I think hands.
Hands.
Isn't the lobster connected to the shin bone?
You mean enough.
Yeah. It works its way down.
Heart.
All good answers. Not the one I'm going to talk about, though.
There you go.
I like that.
I'll put it this way. When all is said and done, I know we light the menorah, we light the Chanukiah, but as far as our day-to-day activity, what's different?
Nothing.
Almost nothing.
Yeah.
It's pretty much a regular, quote-unquote, regular day, but there is one big difference. If you go to services...
Davening's different.
What? Oh, excellent. What's different? Come on, Sharon, you got this. Come on. One second.
The timing is different. Davening's earlier.
Why?
Because of the timing that you have to light the Hanukkah.
No.
The timing's different.
We add one very important prayer.
But I was going to say, you add something.
We do. We add. Hallel. Not halal is the Muslim. That's the Muslim kosher thing. No. Okay, that's
okay.
In the other room.
I was going to say,
we don't do halal here. We do kosher.
I was
going to
say
yes. Hallel. Hallel. In fact, that's really the only difference.
Her. She's trying to.
Because on the Lubavitch calendar, it said, was it last night?
Yeah.
Yeah, that said, start saying tal.
Umatar levracha.
Yeah,
that's
that.
Totally, as absolutely, positively nothing to do with Hanukkah. It has to do with December 4th or 5th, depending on the year, when here in America, here in the United States, that's the official rainy season beginning. So that's why we begin that particular addition in the prayer. But as far as Hanukkah is concerned, we add Hallel. Hallel is, for those who don't know, Hallel is a set of, a collection of psalms, really pretty much the same section, it's like a whole slew in a row from psalms, from Tehillim, that are added on special occasions, like Yom Tov, any festival and holiday. It's added on Rosh Chodesh, and it's added, obviously, on Hanukkah for its purposes. That is really the only major difference. There's no special mitzvah to have a meal, although we seem to do very well without a commandment to do that. It just seems to come naturally. Jews, gastronomic affairs, always. Okay? But there is in the one prayer that's added into the Shemona Esrei, into the Amidah, it's the Al Hanisim. Right? It's a paragraph that basically tells the story of what happened with the miracle. The miracle of the victory, the miracle of finding of the jug, of oil. Right, we're familiar with that story?
Mm-hmm.
If not, we got to start with real basics. Okay? But in that Al Hanisim prayer, it says, and therefore, when the sages established this holiday, they established it, Lehodot Ulahalel, to praise and give thanks. That's what the holiday is all about. Verbally acknowledging and giving thanks. So the organ that I want to discuss this evening is your mouth. This is not going to change that I will do not one, probably at least one, probably a two-part series on the mouth again. But just in relation to Hanukkah, I would love to talk a little bit about this. Now, for those of you who were last year and we did the series on the 12 tribes, so the very last tribe... Who was the youngest of the 12 sons of Jacob?
Benjamin.
Excellent. Benjamin. Okay? I won't hold you accountable to remember every golden word. Although there is a recording of it, so Binyamin, the last of the brothers, the last of the sons of Yaakov. I've shared this before. Every single tribe. How many tribes in total?
12.
Each tribe is ascribed and assigned 1 month of the year. Right? 12 months, 12 tribes. There's a parallel. It's not for today, but trust me, right? We touched on it many times in the course of discussing the tribes. Which month is associated with Benjamin, with Binyamin? It's this month of Kislev, the one that we're in now. The month of Kislev. Okay? In addition to the name of the tribe, the name of the month, if you recall, that on the breastplate that the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, used to wear, right, as part of one of the garments that he wore, there were 12 stones, 12 different precious gems. Again, each associated with a different tribe, but it was 12 different ones. What was Benjamin's stone? What was his? I'm just curious. I didn't think so. Okay, you can tell it to me in Hebrew or English.
It was a weird one.
It was a weird one. Like the others are just normal. Because we see those all the time. Sure, we happened to run into an emerald the other day. Right? It's not emerald. In Hebrew, it's called yashpeh. Yashpeh, that's what it's called in Hebrew.
Perida?
Who?
Perida? Or Perida?
I don't think so.
No, garnet?
Purple. Let's see if they translate it into English. Here we go. Yeah, they don't even translate. They just write the Hebrew. You shall fill it with stone mounting, four rows of stone, a row of Odem, Pitada, and Berekes. That's row one. The second row is Nofech, Sapir, V'Yahalom. The third is Leshem, Shavo, and Achlama. And the fourth is Tarshish, Shoham, and Yashpeh. There's our word. Let's see if they say it in the bottom what it is. I don't think so. Yeah, very good. It says, the diversity of opinions regarding the identification of the gemstones mentioned in Scripture makes it almost impossible to translate their names with any degree of accuracy in English. To illustrate, Nofech is variously rendered smaragd, I have no idea what that is, or emerald, a green gem, carbuncle, which is a red gem, or black pearl, according to a third opinion. Therefore, we have merely transliterated the Hebrew names. They are avoiding the issue. But Yashpeh, but here's what's fascinating about this Yashpeh. In Hebrew, it's spelled Yud, Shin, Peh, He. Four letters. Really simple. If I told you to break it into two parts. Yesh. Yesh means
there is.
There is. The last two letters spell peh, which is your mouth. Yesh peh. There is a mouth. It's a funny name for a stone. And the question then becomes, what has that got to do with Benjamin? This is his stone. And what's that got to do with Kislev and thereby Hanukkah? That is the question I'd like to explore with you this evening. So let's learn a little bit about Benjamin. We know one unique aspect is that he's the youngest. Okay? How many in the room here are the youngest in their family? Yaha. That's right.
So that makes sense. He didn't get a word in edgewise.
Well, we're going to talk about it. We're going to get there. Okay? It's funny you say that. You say that jokingly, but watch. Watch carefully. One of the unique aspects about Benjamin, he was the only one of the brothers who was actually born in the land of Canaan, what is now Israel. All the other brothers were born outside of it when Yaakov was visiting Uncle Lavan, Uncle Laban. Benjamin was born already when they came back in, number one. Number two, in the fateful meeting, remember, Jacob ran away. He had to run away after he got the first, right? He got the firstborn rights, he got the birthright. And Esau swore that he was going to kill him. So Yaakov left. And that's when he met Rachel and Leah, and he married and had all these kids. And now on the fateful meeting with Yaakov and Esav again, who was not there? Benjamin. That's correct. Benjamin was not. Why not?
He
hadn't been born yet. Keep this in mind. He didn't have any of that encounter with Esav. Okay? Let's take one more aspect of him. Benjamin somehow, okay, it's just based on timing. I don't want to get too deep into it. But just take it at face value for now. Benjamin became aware of what the brothers had done when selling Yosef. Benjamin became aware of it early on, okay? And he made a conscious decision not to tell Yaakov, not to tell his father, okay? Our sages point out that the name of his stone, Yashveh, which is broken up as to Yesh Peh, there is a mouth, he has what to say, but remains silent. Keeps his mouth shut. Now, this is an important piece. Whose son is Benjamin? Which mother does he come from?
Rachel.
Rachel. Okay, Rachel.
And me.
Huh?
And me.
And me.
Have you met my child?
Let's not go there. He comes from Rachel. Okay? Probably the most famous story. What Rachel is most famous for is what? What happened early on?
7 years of work.
Good. Yaakov is willing to work 7 years to marry Rachel. And then, and then what happens?
And you can have a baby. Laban gave him Leah.
Swap. Laban switches on him and gives him Leah instead of Rachel. Okay?
Rachel kept her mouth shut.
Ooh. So Michelle is pointing out that let's open up, let's peel back one layer. How could Laban have pulled off such a switch? Yaakov's no idiot. Rachel's no idiot. How could you pull that off? In fact, many of us are familiar, that Rachel and Jacob had made a little secret pact that they would have a sign. Because they knew who they were dealing with. Laban comes with credentials, I should say better, with a rap sheet as to what he's all about. Laban was known as a trickster, as somebody who wasn't going to be honest and have integrity. So they had a suspicion that he was going to pull a fast one. So Rachel and Jacob made an agreement that they would have a secret sign that under the chuppah they would share to make sure that it was the right one. So then how did it all go wrong?
Rachel
gave that sign to Leah.
Why?
Wow. Why would she do that?
The older sister. Because it wasn't right for the younger one to get married before.
Who made that rule? There's no such rule. In fact, that's where the Torah actually says Laban's argument is, well, we would never do that in our place to let a younger one. That's such farfignugin. That's such... You know, fill in the blank. There's no such law, really, in truth. That's a trick. So why would Rachel give up the sign?
She didn't want to embarrass her sister.
That's what our sages point out. Rachel, and we talked about this when we were learning about Yisachar and Zevulun and all of the different interactions between Rachel and Leah. There was a certain kinship that they had. There was a certain tension that Leah had the children first and Rachel had none. That put a little crimp in their relationship. But the fact of the matter is that they did care for one another, and Rachel did not want Leah to become embarrassed, and she gave up that sign. So watch. Rachel is the mother who shares a secret, has a child, Benjamin, who keeps a secret.
But didn't all of the other brothers keep the secret too?
Well, amongst themselves. But Benjamin had the ability to share that. The other brothers, he wasn't in on the sale.
Part of it.
Benjamin wasn't in on the sale.
Okay.
He was a little kid. He stayed home.
Well, right.
So the other brothers certainly weren't going to share it because that's, you know, that their tochas is on the line.
Okay.
Rachel has a secret and shares it. Benjamin has a secret and doesn't share it. Let's keep going. Let's go a little further in history. Another descendant that comes from Benjamin. His name is King Saul. King Saul, the first king of Israel. Shaul HaMelech comes from the tribe of Benjamin. The story goes that when he was appointed as king, this is pre-David, just to put it in a context here. David's only the second king of Israel. First was Shaul. Okay? When Shaul was actually appointed by the prophet, and he was amongst all the people, the verse tells us that he kept quiet. He did not make a big deal of it. He kept that to himself. And our sages are bothered by that. Like, why aren't you announcing this? And the sages teach us that he didn't want, this was an element of, and it's a good word, tzniut. Tzniut is modesty. Modesty. And we'll see what that, how this comes out in a moment. Let's go one more person that comes from the line of Benjamin. A woman. A woman in a much different story.
Esther.
Thank you. Esther. Queen Esther in the Purim story. No, it's Hanukkah. I'm not messed up. Right? But Esther in the Purim story is also from the tribe of Benjamin. And yet, she keeps a secret. There is something unique about Benjamin's line about having an ability to share something and either rightfully should have kept the secret and shared it, or rightfully could have told the secret and held on to it. Yesh peh. He has a mouth, but he knows when and how to use it. The mouth is such an interesting organ. It is both an intake and an outtake. Takes in air, takes in food, but also lets out voice. It's an in and an out. Lets out breath as well. Okay? Your ears should only be an intake. Your eyes should be only an intake. Okay? What? No.
Eyes convey a lot of information.
Good. That's true. It's really on the face, right? And we talked a lot about the face really revealing the essence of the person. And it's true. The eyes do reveal. But its functionality is really to draw in and then process what needs to be seen. Okay? The mouth is clearly dual functionality. Clearly. You even have two pipes. Two different pipes. Right? I don't want to give too much away, but one of the classes we're going to talk about the neck. There's a lot to talk about the neck, believe it or not. It's fascinating. Benjamin's descendants are those that have a mouth. Now, let me describe it this way. If I say, you have a car. You have a car. What does that mean?
Possess it.
You possess it. Who controls what? Do you control the car or does the car control you?
You control the car.
Let's hope.
Your children control.
Right, your children. That's why it's, right, my kids have my car. Right. When you use the terminology that I have or it belongs to me, there's a certain connotation of mastery. That it's in my possession, I'm in charge of it. You find this terminology throughout Judaic literature. When it talks about the difference between righteous individuals and evil individuals, they talk about their heart. Who's in control of whom? So it says the righteous are in charge of their heart, but the wicked are controlled by theirs. If you think about it, it makes a lot of sense. Because we all have urges. We all have desires. The question is, do we act on them or not? Who's in control? Is my heart, my desires telling me to go after this, that, and the other, and I can't control myself? So then my heart is in control of me. As opposed to, yes, that's maybe my desire, but I'm in control of my heart. I won't give in to that. When we talk about Benjamin, yesh peh, that means he has a mouth, means his mouth is under his control. He's in control of his mouth. He knows when to speak, and he knows when not to speak. Right? That's really the essence defining of who Binyamin is, who Benjamin really is. Therefore, his stone represents his ability to have control over his mouth. Whether it's to speak when it's appropriate or to stay quiet when that's appropriate. Now, If we learn to do this right, the way I found it brought in this particular sefer, in this particular book, it teaches us a valuable lesson. If we learn to harness the power of our mouth properly, meaning that we know to control, to speak when it's appropriate and not speak when it's not appropriate, by the time the end of the month comes around, we will have a stronger ability to use our mouth properly. How would we use it? With praise. Think about the following. I had a guy come to me, six, 7 months ago. And I was talking to him about prayer. I was talking about the power of prayer. And he looked at me very, very...
skeptically?
Even, it's worse than that. It was more than just skeptical. It was almost, really? I pray and nothing really ever happens. Along those lines. It's a little more than skeptical, almost a little, not really.
Cynical.
That's a good one. It was a little cynical. So I said to him, I knew he's very handy. I said to him, let's make sure. That's all right. That's the shop. So I said to him.
When you said he was disbelieving, exactly.
See? See?
I remember hearing it.
Robin, don't mess with me. I have the power. So I know this fellow is handy. And I said to him, do you ever work with tools? He's like, of course. I say, how do you build whatever it was? He says, I have my hammer and I have my drill. And my. I said, and do they work well? He says, of course. I said, well, don't they get ruined? He says, no, I take very good care of my tools and I make sure to put them away properly and they're all washed and cleaned and, inventoried. Everything needs to be done, right? Right? Everything needs to be done. I said, what makes you think that the tools that we have in our body are any different? You want to use your mouth for prayer? Well, are you using your mouth as a tool properly? If I told you that every time you spoke, you used foul language, you spoke Lashon Hara, you did this, you spoke negatively of this, it's gossiping, on and on and on. I said, aren't you basically taking a good hammer or taking a good screwdriver and bending it out of shape? I said, these are tools that God gave us to pray, to speak. And I go ahead, and every time I misuse it, I'm breaking it. I'm ruining my tools. So you want to know why prayer isn't answered? I said, I don't know why, but maybe we need to start working on our tools a little bit. He liked the answer. He liked the answer. I don't know if it does anything, but I thought it's a fair option. This mouth that we have been given is a tool. We have to take good care of it. Now, just very quickly, What I think we can learn from this in terms of the ability of our mouth to speak or not to speak. The one major difference between human beings and every other creature is our ability to speak, is our ability to communicate. And I know, other animals communicate as well. I know. It's true. But the level of intellect that the human being can convey with their speech, you can convey concepts. Animals don't necessarily convey concepts. They can communicate. They can get across, here's food, here's danger, whatever it is. But the level, right? I can share with you an abstract concept. If I do my job right and speak and articulate it well, I can convey the most lofty of things. That is what differentiates mankind from every other creature. It's fascinating when the Torah describes the creation of man, right? The first human being. It says God, we talked about this, right? How he formed him out of the dust of the ground and then blew into his...
nostril.
Thank you. We talked about this, right? The nostril he blew into man, the soul. So there's a translation known as unclus. Anyone ever hear of unclus?
No.
Unclus, right? Unclus is a commentator, an early, early commentator. He's famous for a lot of things, but most famous for, Anybody? He was the nephew of a Roman general. He was the nephew of a Roman general, and he basically did his own research about truths in the world, and he came upon Judaism. And he left Rome, and he moved to Israel, moved to Canaan, well, Palestine, whatever you want to call it at that point. And he converted. He converted to Judaism, and the story is told, and it's in the Talmud. That's not in the Talmud. It's told about it in the Talmud, where he goes ahead, and they send his uncle. Where did he go? Where did my nephew go? And he finds out that he's in Israel, and he dispatches a whole legion of his army to go bring him back. And he comes to Uncleus. They find out where he is, and they come, and they say, "Your uncle wants you back in Rome." He says, "I'm not going. I found my place here in Judaism, right?" And they say, "No, he told us we have to do it." Fine. And he gets into a whole conversation. Why do you believe that? Turns out, many of them say, "You're onto something. It's true." And they decide they're going to stay also. So wait. The story gets better. Of where he goes ahead, and the uncle dispatches a second group. Same story. Finally, the third group, he tells, "Listen, go, but do not get into a dialogue with him. He's obviously very persuasive. Do not just bring him back." Fine. They come. He wants to engage them in conversation. They, not listening. We're told we got to take you. And they're taking him out of the house, and he reaches up to give the mezuzah a kiss. The mezuzah on the doorpost. They can't control themselves. Like, what is up with that? He says, "I'll just put it to you very simply. Every king in the world, the king is inside the palace and he has guards on the outside. Our God is different. We are on the inside of the house and God stands and protects us on the outside." They go crazy. They're like, "What a concept," right? And sure enough, they say, "Okay, we're not going back to Rome either." Uncleus became one of the greatest commentators on the Torah. When he translates, and he did it in Aramaic, which was the language of the time. When he translated that verse about God formed man and blew into his nose, and man became a living being, he translates it as, "And man became a speaking being." He translated that the highest level of how the godliness within us is manifest is through our ability to speak. Speech is the medium by which I can convey that godliness within. And then you want to know, why is speech so important? Why do we make such a big deal about not speaking Lashon Hara? This is why. Is because this is what makes us different than every other creature. I have the ability to offer words of condolence to somebody, words of comfort to somebody who's going through a hard time. I have an ability to convey ideals, values, concepts, God. I can do all of that with my speech. I can think it all I want, and that's great. But to be in control of your mouth, that's the best. That's the highest level. And the tribe that represents it the most is the tribe of Benjamin. As we showed with Rachel, down through Benjamin, King Saul, Esther, and many others. All down that line. What I think we can walk away with in terms of Hanukkah is this concept. That if this is the holiday in which, in all practical sense, you know, for all intents and purposes, it's nothing more than the holiday of you light a candle and you speak praise. You say Hallel. This is the month. This is the time frame for us to focus on our abilities of speech. How we use our mouth. And this is really, I think, an important lesson. The ability to convey what needs to be conveyed appropriately and to keep our mouths shut when it's appropriate to stay quiet. It's a hard thing to do. But this is what I think. I think this is really what we can focus on. Let me end with the following. The verse says, "Ner Hashem nishmat Adam." The candle of God is the soul of man. Think about that for a second. The candle of God is the soul of man. I think most of us are familiar with the concept that after somebody passes away and he comes to a yahrzeit, right? What do you do? We light a yahrzeit candle. We light a candle. Why? I know it's a nice, you know, warm, fuzzy, you know, especially if you get a scented candle, it's very cool, right? I'm not suggesting you do that. But well, why? What's the concept? The concept is that when we talk about the soul of a person, it's very much associated with a candle, a flame.
A light from within,
a glow. There's a certain spirituality, right? It's because Ner Hashem, the candle of God, is Nishmat Adam. It's the soul of man. When we light, what are we lighting? We're lighting Nerot. We're lighting candles. In a way, I try every year when I sit back and I look at the glow of the candles. I try to ask myself, what am I supposed to learn from this? What am I supposed to take from this? What am I going to work on this year? Perhaps this is one lesson that we can take with us. The ability to understand that our souls are bound up so much with our speech. And how we utilize our speech makes a big impact, not just on the person I'm talking to, but on ourselves. That's that soul, that spirituality from within. Therefore, Binyamin's stone is Yashveh, Yesh Peh. He has a mouth. The mouth that he's in control of it, not it's in the control of him. I don't know. I think it's something worth thinking about, worth putting into place. All right?
Well, so, Benjamin was the 12th son, and this is the 12th month Kislev. What is
why is it the 12th month?
Why it's not the 12th. It's the 12th month in our count, in the Gregorian calendar.
This year.
Take it up with Gregory.
And, you said you were going to draw a connection between Hanukkah and Kislev. And I must
have missed it. So Hanukkah is the month in which, let me rephrase that. Kislev is the month in which Hanukkah falls.
Right.
Now, Hanukkah is associated with just Hallel. It's all about the ability to speak.
Right.
Okay, so Kislev is connected to Benjamin. That's his month. It's all about control of the mouth. When we work on that, it gives us the ability at the end of the month, during the holiday of Hanukkah, to use our mouth properly in the ultimate praise to God in Hallel. Maybe I didn't speak that out. Get it? Speak it out. Ha ha ha. Okay. Anyway, just a thought, but we will come back to this because the mouth, there really is a lot to say. Sorry, there really is. There really is a lot. I didn't touch on the tongue. I didn't touch on the lips. There's so much we have to talk about.
So you're going to do all of that as part of mouth?
I think so. The truth is, on my research so far, I can do a class on each one of them. I'm nervous. There's so many things to talk about. I don't know. We'll see. We definitely will touch on tongue and lips and mouth in general. Definitely. I don't know if it'll be wrapped into one
2-year class.
We'll see.
Does it make a difference? It's a never-ending class.
The month is going to change before Hanukkah's
over? Great. See, I was wondering if someone was going to ask that. Roz is on it. Roz is right on. You very often are spot on. Sometimes you're way off, but this is right on. Roz asked, it's very nice, beautiful, nice Dvar Torah, Rabbi, but Hanukkah isn't just in Kislev, it's also now, it's going to straddle into the next month of Tevet. So it's a long piece, but there's a reason, how do I put this? It ties into a whole new concept. The month of Tevet, okay, the month of Tevet, I realize it's going to get way off here. I'll give you a hint.
Just a little.
I'll give you a little bit. Okay. We know that Yaakov and Esav, they represent, you know, Luke Skywalker versus Darth Vader. I mean, this is like good versus evil. This is every good versus evil movie you've ever seen. This is the classic picture. Certain months of the year are more prone to an Esav personality versus a Yaakov personality. I'll try to portray this as easily as I can, right? We can understand, let's say, the month of Pesach, right? The month of Nisan, okay, that falls in line with advantage Jews, right? That's the month we've got our freedom. It's preceding the month that we're going to get the Torah. We can get that Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, those months of what we'll call April, May, June, time, right, is two thumbs up for the Jewish people. Well, you can have months like Av and Elul, Tammuz and Av, which is July and August, are very often downer months. That's the month in which the temples are destroyed and you have the 3 weeks. And certain months have certain energy. Some are yay and some are nay. I'm oversimplifying it big time. Okay? The month of Tevet is a month that really is more prone towards an Esav personality than a Yaakov personality. That's the intrinsic nature of the month.
Even though Hanukkah's part of it?
I'm answering why Hanukkah needs to get into the month of Tevet.
So it can help.
So it can help. That's the short answer. It's part of a much bigger picture, but the point of that, the illumination of what Hanukkah can do and remind us and what we can gain from it, we purposely schlep it into the next month as a boost so that it Teves isn't only an Esav month, we can have a claim to that, a stake to that claim as well.
Does that happen on a regular basis?
Every year. In fact, that's it's one of the reasons as to why Hanukkah is 8 days and not seven. We ask this every year. The miracle of the oil was really only 7 days. They had enough for one.
Right.
So why do we celebrate eight? You only have to celebrate seven. The miracle was only 7 days. Right?
Right.
It's a famous question. There are literally hundreds of answers. One answer that I'm proposing in this very short snippet is specifically so that it will guarantee that Hanukkah will go into the month of Tevet. That's not Rosh Chodesh. It's a regular, plain old-fashioned day of Tevet. Specifically so that the illumination of the Hanukkah, the menorah, and all that it represents can be brought into the month of Tevet. There's a lot to this.
I learned a lot about challah
from Bachala? Oh, Hallel. Hallel. I was like, oh, I'm glad he's teaching about challah. It's good. What's I got to do with it? But okay. All right. Anybody want to join me for a drink and a donut? All right, let's do it.